court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia. Welcome to Court Appointed, Two Dudes' Perspective on Legal Frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
We have daylight savings time going on right now.
Makes me tired. It's dark. I'm ready to go to bed.
I know. It is. It's like the sleepy time of year.
Where did all my energy go?
But the thing is, it's like, it doesn't matter that it's only an hour difference. It feels like it might as well be like 3 or 4 hours difference.
I know. It's like we sit around in the evening watching TV and, man, I'm ready to go to bed. What time is it? 8:30.
8:30. I feel like when I get off work, it's 6:37. It's like, what time is it? Nah, time to go to bed.
Yeah, that's about right.
I don't want to do anything. Well, the reason...
I feel like my get up and go done got up and went.
Today's episode actually has a little bit to do with sleepiness and sleepy time.
Well, I have to sleep with a mask on so I get my sleepiness. Otherwise, I'm all over the place.
Some of the research I was doing actually was talking about sleep apnea, so it's kind of funny.
Oh, I had that severely. I wouldn't be here today if it hadn't been diagnosed. I'm here to tell you. Well, it's a serious disease.
Think you would have stopped sleeping in your, or stopped breathing in your sleep?
Yeah, I was. That's what Reggie White died of.
Did he really?
Sleep apnea. Yeah, that contributed to his heart disease.
Was it make your heart work harder?
Yes. I went for my sleep test. I had a doctor diagnose that he thought that that's what it was, but they send you for a sleep test to confirm and how bad it is. And normally they let you go through the whole night while they test, and then they send it to the doctor for him to decide if you do have sleep apnea.
Yeah.
But there are certain criteria. If you meet it, they wake you up and fit you with a mask. I met that criteria.
Like, whoa, this guy's about to die.
I stopped breathing 150 times in the first hour of the test.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm no mathematician, but that's over 2 a minute.
Yeah. Once I would fall asleep, my air passage would just collapse. And so then I'd wake myself up and then it would collapse again and fall back, you know, and I'd fall back asleep. And they came in and fit me with the mask and solved that problem from there. But what happens is you never get to that deep phase of sleep.
The REM?
Yeah. So your body never gets to completely go to sleep and rest. You're unconscious, but your body is not at rest like it does when you sleep. So that's why it causes the extreme wear on your body the whole time.
You never get to REM, so you end up losing your religion.
And that's right. Well, I would fall asleep at red lights. That was how bad it was.
I've heard of people doing that before.
Yeah.
I knew a guy I used to lifeguard with, and he did that. But we always said he did that just because he partied all night.
Well, now, that wasn't me. I couldn't sleep. But I was drinking 3 pots of coffee a day and could not figure out. I would go to bed sometimes at 8 at night, and I could never get untired. Mm. So it's a bad problem.
Well, the topic, actually, I had the idea for this show because I was reading a book. And it's called The Power of Habit, Why We Do What We Do in Life and Business by Charles Duhigg.
That's a wordy title.
It is. It's very wordy. I just call it The Power of Habit.
I would leave it there, too.
Yeah, I went into the whole subtitle.
So brevity was not this guy's long suit, huh?
No, he had a habit of running on. it was a really good book. I definitely would recommend it if you haven't read it already. It's pretty interesting. But one of the...
I'm worn out just from the title.
The things he was talking about, towards the end of the book, they talked about this case of this guy named Brian Thomas. And he suffered from automatism and sleepwalking since he was a kid.
Hmm.
And basically what happened was he... and I'll go more into his story later because it's kind of an interesting story. But he confessed to strangling his 57-year-old wife, Christine, in July of 2008 in their camper while they were on vacation. And he basically, after he did it, he called 911 or emergency services. I think in England, it happened overseas in England. So I think they call it like 999 or something. It's a different number. Hmm. But anyway, there's your trivia for the day. Maybe. Right. I don't know. If I'm wrong, I'm sure we'll get corrected.
Yeah, because we'll call information if you're wrong or something.
So anyway, and he said, what have I done? I've been trying to wake her. I think I've killed my wife. Oh, my God. I thought someone had broken in. I was fighting with those boys, but it was Christine. I must have been dreaming or something. What have I done? And he basically claimed he was mistaken. He had mistaken his wife for an intruder, and he woke up and found out that he had killed his wife. And he had a trial on this, and actually, he was found not guilty of murder based on this whole automatism or sleepwalking.
There's always some expert that will come along and testify to anything.
Well, but now you got to think that this actually makes a little bit of sense here, if you mm-hmm. think about it. Now, it might be a bit of a stretch, and I'm not saying that everybody should do these things. Oh, I was asleep when I did this, because it's definitely not a one-size-fits-all type argument. But I think it does have some validity. And,
all right.
And I'll get into why I think that.
Well, I was going to say, you may have to represent somebody then.
Yeah.
That same thing just happened like a month or two ago.
Where?
It wasn't around here, but it was in the national news that there was, I think he was a preacher of some type, and he woke up and called the police and said, I think I've killed my wife. And he says he was dreaming in a sleep and killed her.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not read about that.
Yeah, it was just in the last month or two. If I had known what we were going to talk about, I would have been better prepared.
I did. I swear I texted you this topic.
I never got it. I did get it, Your Honor.
Because what I said it was, I called it homicidal somnambulism.
I would have no idea what you were saying. I would think that you were drunk when you typed that.
I swear I typed that, because that's what this is called. Homicidal somnambulism. So homicidal meaning homicide. Psalm, if you break apart the
somnia.
Latin, psalm meaning sleep, mm-hmm. and then ambulism meaning like ambulatory.
Like an walking. Ambulance coming.
Well, ambulatory, like walking. a little bit different.
Remember how Kyle used to call it an ambulance?
Ambulance?
Ambulance.
No, I don't.
That's what he used to call it, an ambulance.
Well, there's a video on the internet where somebody calls an ambulance. And there was
Amber
a girl.
Lamp.
Yeah, there was a girl in the video, and everybody said that her name was Amber Lamps because she was pretty funny. Well, no, but to get back about this actual case, because it's pretty interesting. So they went camping, and this is Brian Thomas. He and his wife went camping in July of 2008, and they had a camper van, and they parked their van in this seaside village of Aberporth, which is West Wales. But they were disturbed by some, as they quote-unquote, boy racers who were on their motorbikes performing wheel spins and handbrakes and handbrake turns until 11:30 p.m.
Those darn boys on their motor racers performing wheel spins and handbrakes. I hate when that happens. Blimey, I can't get any sleep around here.
So they left, and they drove to somewhere else where they settled in for the night. But then later that night is when he woke up and he called the emergency numbers and said he had strangled his wife in his sleep.
And he thought it was those ruffians.
He did. They were skeptical at first, but then police investigated and found out that they were actually quite a loving couple, and they had been married for 40-some years, and actually they were planning a cruise into the Mediterranean and already booked the tickets and everything. They went out, they watched rugby together, and they were just your normal average couple. And then they actually carried out tests on Brian Thomas, and this was while he spent 10 months in prison while awaiting trial, and confirmed that he suffered from night terrors.
Hmm.
And so...
So he strangled three of his cellmates, and they decided that he was innocent.
Yeah. It's not his fault.
That's like testing for witches.
Burn her.
Throw her in the lake. If she sinks... She was innocent. If she floats, she's a witch. We'll kill her.
But what else? What else apart from witches floats or sinks?
Heads I win, tails you lose.
So, at the start of the trial, the prosecution basically said that they told that this is going to be a unique case, and they accepted that Thomas should be not found guilty. But basically, what they said, there should be a special verdict due to guilt by insanity, which would have meant that he could be held in a secure psychiatric hospital. So they said that even when they started the trial, they said, well, you know what? There may be something to this, but we think it's more of a temporary insanity type case, and we still think he should be locked up. So
if you're convinced that this is a real thing and it happens, I wouldn't call it temporary insanity. I mean, it's a condition that somebody has, it has nothing to do with mental illness.
Yeah. No, I mean, but that's kind of one of the things. Typically, when you have these kinds of cases, temporary insanity is a defense. And when somebody pleads temporary insanity, it doesn't mean that they get to go scot-free. It means they're usually locked up in a facility until
right.
whatever.
Yeah. Until they don't have that anymore.
Yeah.
Well, all he needs is a CPAP machine like I have, and he'd be all right.
Give that man a CPAP machine.
That's right.
If he had only gone to see your doctor.
Yeah. He'd still be alive today. Well, he may be. His wife's not.
His CPAP machine needs to have shackles and chains as well.
That's true. There you go. It's just like you do with a werewolf. Tie him to the bed.
But the weird thing is that the prosecution in this case, from what I can gather, did not really offer any evidence in the case. They basically just said, hey, this is what it is, and you decide what to do. And so basically, the jury gave a not guilty verdict. And after it happened, the judge told Brian Thomas, he said, and this is crazy, I've never seen this, you are a decent man and a devoted husband. I strongly suspect that you may well be feeling a sense of guilt. In the eyes of the law, you bear no responsibility. You are discharged. All of us who have been in court and listened to the 999 call know exactly what your feelings were when you found that your wife was dead. So they almost kind of gave this guy an apology.
Held him up on the altar.
Yeah, and said, hey, it wasn't your fault.
I'm going to tell you, I think he bamboozled all of them.
You think so?
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I've seen too many prime times and 2020s and all those 48 hours. The husband always did it. I mean, it was a plot. There was a mistress somewhere along the line. I don't care how many rugby games they went to. There was something else going on there. And you know what? Those tickets for that cruise were probably transferable. So even though she didn't make the trip, I'll bet you there was somebody there to soften the blow for the widower on that trip.
I'm not. I think this might be the one in a million case. I think this is actually a good and just verdict.
Well, call me a cynic, but I don't think so. I don't think that would happen.
Well, I'm the one that sees this kind of stuff on a daily basis, and I'm not a cynic.
I am. I've seen those shows enough.
You've seen enough TV.
The husband always did it. That's where I get all my legal knowledge from, TV and movies.
I guess I've just
seen. They wouldn't lie.
I've just seen these type things apply in like real life, and I know if something like this was argued in front of a court, like it would have to be legit in order to be bought and sold like that. Because, I mean, it wasn't me. I was asleep. To be able to actually,
I woke up and she was dead. You say it with an English accent and you just sound more innocent.
That's true.
I swear, sir, I was as shocked as the rest of you. When I woke up and saw her laying there, I said, blimey, who could have done it? It was those ruffians on the motorsports.
Doing their handbraking and power spins.
They power spinned her head off. That's what happened.
So the prosecutor basically said that this was a very unique case, which I have to agree.
I do too.
And what had happened was that they had essentially put on evidence that he was in a state of automatism and that his mind was not in control of his body and that it was very severe that night because of what they had witnessed with the boys on their bikes. And also there was another thing too, and this was a little bit more kind of sketchy, is that he had recently come off his regular medication too. So it may have added to his sleep problems and made his dreams a bit more vivid. And there was an expert witness testimony to that.
Well, now, I'm going to say it. I don't know enough about it from a medical standpoint to know exactly what it is. But there's something that's an enzyme or a protein or something that's produced when you sleep that suppresses your muscle reactions. So you have dreams and your body doesn't act out what's mm-hmm. going on. You know, and there are people that have low levels of this, or their body doesn't produce it when they sleep, and that's why they sleepwalk and do some of those kind of things. So, you know, it is possible, but what I'm saying is, so if you found them not guilty by reason of temporary insanity, well, they wouldn't need to be locked up and be cured of it. They would need to be given some kind of shot or whatever it is, booster or something that, you know, counteracts this thing. I mean, they know what it is. It's not like sleep is a mystery. You know, that nobody knows what goes on. There's people that do nothing but study that, and they would be able to figure that kind of stuff out.
Well, the weird thing about this case is that when this happened, it was actually a full moon, and there was testimony that he had actually been bitten by some random animal several weeks before.
So we're bringing in werewolf theories?
And then afterwards, he had an aversion to garlic. So I don't really know.
And he grew a beard and lots of body hair?
Yeah, he's a really hairy dude.
No, those hairy dudes will do it all the time. I don't trust hairy dudes.
To get back to it, now we talked about this in a previous episode, but can you think of the legal reason why he was found not guilty, if you're analyzing this?
Well, they're saying that he did not mens rea. He did not contemplate actually doing it. He didn't have the mental forethought of committing a crime.
Yeah, he did not. There's two elements, the mens rea and the actus reus. And that basically the actus reus was his wife getting strangled and killed.
Yeah, that he activated that. he activated that rea.
He killed her.
Yeah.
But then the mens rea, he didn't require that necessary mental state. He didn't have the mental capacity to kill her. So, that, you know, if I'm trying to break it back down and rein it back into our previous episodes, yeah, you were right. It's the mens rea. He didn't have the mens rea.
I owe it all to you. I learned that from you, counselor.
And that would be the same thing for a temporary insanity at the same time, too. He was temporarily insane, so.
He didn't have mens rea.
He didn't have mens rea.
Ooh, so, and then also you look for a motive. I mean, so apparently they must not have thought he had a motive.
Yeah, there was no motive. And there was no history of this or, you know, any kind of domestic violence between them. So it was like.
Insurance policies. Did they check insurance policies? Was the guy a gambler? Did he have gambling debts? I mean, there's a lot of things. I've learned it all off of Prime Time in 2020 and 48 hours. Always go after the husband. They always did it.
Always the husband?
Always.
Well, this actually is not such a unique case that it's never been presented before. And actually, there's a bunch of cases that have happened here in the United States regarding homicidal somnambulism.
Homicidal. You made that name up. That's not real, is it?
I just like saying it. Or you can just call it sleepwalking murder.
Your Honor, we have a case of homicidal somnambulism. What?
You've heard of pillow talk? This is pillow murder.
Yeah.
But before we get into those other cases, I think there might be some pending motions today.
Well, yes, Your Honor. We'd like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right, approach. Who do we have on the docket today?
Well, today on the docket?
Well, you just made that up. That's not a real word.
You caught me. I'll say the real word. First on the docket, we have Sleep Number Mattresses. This month, we're honoring our military. We all know sleep is important, but consider someone you know who is in the military or a veteran. Imagine how much a good night's sleep means to them.
This month, Sleep Number is honoring our nation's heroes with savings reserved just for them. The Sleep Number bed lets you choose your ideal comfort and support on each side. It's the perfect bed for couples.
Their newest beds are so smart, they actually sense your every move and automatically adjust, so you stay sleeping comfortably throughout the night.
They even have an adjustment for snoring. Does your bed do that?
No, but I think with our topic today, that this is very timely. You need a good bed for a good sleep so no accidents occur.
If you want to avoid homicidal somnambulism, get a Sleep Number bed.
Try to say that three times real fast.
Now, I'm not certain on this, but I am almost positive there have been no incidents of homicidal somnambulism on a Sleep Number bed.
There, good enough reason alone to buy one.
That's right.
Sleep Number beds cost about the same as a traditional mattress, last twice as long, and 91% of owners recommend.
Come in for exclusive savings just for military and veterans. And right now, it's the semi-annual sale where you'll find clearance savings of $600 on a Sleep Number P6 mattress with Sleep IQ technology.
You'll only find Sleep Number at any of the 550 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Visit sleepnumber.com to find the store near you.
And be sure to tell them Court Appointed sent you.
That's right, and have a good night's sleep. Next on the docket, we have our friends at HelloFresh with us once again.
I love HelloFresh.
HelloFresh, they're great meals and great fun cooking. HelloFresh is a meal kit delivery service that shops, plans, and delivers your favorite step-by-step recipes and pre-measured ingredients so you can just cook, eat, and enjoy.
You're able to choose your delivery day for when it works best with your busy schedule. You can pause the account for weeks at a time when you're out of town.
All of the ingredients come pre-measured in handy labeled meal kits, so you know which ingredients go with which recipe. They're delivered right to your door in recyclable, insulated packaging.
HelloFresh offers a wide variety of chef-curated recipes that change weekly. There are three different plans to choose from: Classic, Veggie, and Family.
With Classic, you get a variety of meat, fish, and seasonal produce. Veggie, vegetarian recipes with plant-based proteins, grains, and seasonal produce.
Family plans are quick and easy meals with all the yum-worthy flavor the whole family will love.
Yum-worthy.
Yum-worthy.
Now, HelloFresh makes it so easy to cook delicious meals, balanced dinners for less than $10 a meal. There's no more time-consuming meal planning or grocery shopping. Enjoy not having to plan dinner, spending money on takeout for an easy night, or worry about gathering ingredients week after week.
The thing I like about HelloFresh is all the notable recipes. There's some, talk about
a yum factor.
The thing is, too, about the notable recipes is they always have some fun names, too.
Absolutely.
So some of the Hall of Fame customer-voted favorites were the Juicy Lucy Burger with tomato, onion jam, and arugula salad. Another favorite was lobster ravioli and shrimp with tomatoes and tarragon cream sauce.
And then there's kid-tested recipes made specifically with families in mind. Easy peasy ravioli gratin with spinach, thyme, and Parmesan breadcrumbs.
And then there's also the Tommy Smurl favorite recipe.
Human cumin beef.
Not with real human.
No, it's actually Hunan. I just read it wrong. I didn't have my glasses on, and I thought I was fixing human cumin beef. But once I found out the correct name, it was really good. And there were no humans involved other than in the cooking process, but not in the cooking process.
And we actually made that recipe together on a YouTube video that we shared on Riley's YouTube channel, I believe.
There was much drinking and levity, and we had fun doing it, and we had no idea what we were doing and still made a gourmet meal.
That's right. We had a good time and followed the directions and had some drinks, and it was a good time. And I think that was probably my favorite HelloFresh cooking experience.
That was one of mine, too. You know why there's no humans in there, don't you?
Why is that?
Well, because it's like the same reason cannibals don't eat clowns. They taste funny.
So right now, for $30 off your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com and enter the promo code COURT30.
That's right. For $30 off on your first week of HelloFresh, visit HelloFresh.com with the promo code COURT30.
So you've answered the first trivia question correctly about the reason why homicidal somnambulism is not necessarily a crime, and you can be found not guilty of it.
The mens rea thing?
The lack of mens rea, yep.
Was that a trivia? That wasn't a legal brief that I got in on the sly there?
It was an early legal brief.
I had an early legal brief!
That's right. Without the brief. So I did a little teaser for some other cases of homicidal somnambulism.
Oh, Michael, you're such a teaser.
I just want to say that word again. So one of the first cases I found...
We used teasers on the railroad.
Did you?
Yeah.
For what?
Well, you have yards that you actually have gravity yards, and to get a car started rolling down the hill, mm-hmm. you have a bar with a wedge-type device that guys can put under the wheel, and they start moving it up and down, and it gets that wheel to start moving, so it starts the motion of the car down the hill towards the place where you're going to dump the coal out of it.
That's a teaser bar?
That's a teaser. Uh-huh.
That sounds very unsafe.
The guys that do those jobs are called teasers. So when you're filling the positions there, all right, we need three teasers tonight.
How many teaser accidents are there?
There's teaser accidents. I don't know. There's a lot of things on the railroad that are kind of funny. You know, you have teasers, you have glad hands, you have angle cocks. I don't know. I'm not sure. It was a male-dominated industry.
Do those two work together?
Sometimes.
The glad hands and the angle cocks?
The glad hands are connected to hoses that are connected to the angle cocks, yes.
Interesting.
Figure that one out for yourself.
Interesting. This is not on topic for our show today, but I did go see John Mulhaney in he did stand-up comic during the martial artist series. Saw him at the Keith Albee.
Yes.
And he was very funny. But he did this one little bit when he first walked out, and this is what made me think of it. He goes, Huntington is a beautiful, beautiful city. He goes, I love this place. I got here, I was walking around. It's like a little model railroad town with all these trains and tracks and everywhere. He goes, it's like a model railroad with meth addicts walking everywhere, but still, it's a model railroad.
That's right. Meth addicts everywhere.
So I thought thought that was kind of funny in a sad way.
Ground zero, in a very sad way.
But to get back on topic, so there have been some cases in the United States regarding sleepwalking deaths or sleepwalking murder.
Murder, she wrote.
The first was that I found was Massachusetts versus Terrell, and this was in 1846. And Albert Terrell was acquitted in the murder of a prostitute in Boston. He slit the woman's throat and almost decapitated her, actually. And then he set fire to the brothel and fled to New Orleans, where he was arrested. And his lawyer stated that Terrell was a chronic sleepwalker and perhaps committed the crime while asleep. And the jury actually agreed and found him not guilty.
Now, that was rigged. Perhaps. So his defense lawyer didn't even say he definitely was. He said perhaps that could have been.
Yeah.
He read that somewhere once, and perhaps that could have been the case.
Now, this was 1846.
And they just didn't like the prostitute or the brothel. That's why they acquitted him.
Yeah, when I read the facts of that case, I couldn't believe it. But that was basically the first U.S. case where there was a sleepwalking defense with success.
All right, and there's the first one that was also a lie.
That one smells a little funny. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there. I'm not buying that one.
I disagree with that one, too.
Yeah. The second one.
That was a lot of work to go to being asleep, cut off somebody's head, and set the place on fire.
Yeah.
How do you do that in your sleep?
And, well, there's some more. Some of these other cases are a little.
How can they go beyond that? That one's already out there.
The other one was Fane versus Commonwealth, and this was an 1870s case and involved a man who fell asleep in the lobby of a Kentucky hotel. And one of the porters shook him, trying to wake him up. And the guy pulled out a gun and shot the porter 3 times. And then there was testimony that while the porter held him on the floor, the man repeatedly yelled, "Hoo-wee!" And supposedly, he rose, left the room, and told a witness that he'd shot someone. And when told who it was, he conveyed sadness. And the shooter was found guilty of manslaughter. But the conviction was reversed on appeal because there was evidence that he had a lifelong history of sleepwalking and he'd been sleep deprived before the attack, and that was excluded from the trial, so he wasn't able to put that in there.
Well, now, I will say this. There are people that if you wake them up from sleep, their reaction could be somewhat violent.
Yeah.
I know there was a guy that I was at a camp once with when I was about high school age, and somebody else knew this about him, and they put somebody up to going and waking him up. So they leaned down. He leaned down and real loudly in his ear was like, "Get up," you know, or whatever like this. The guy punched him straight out right in the face from a dead sleep. I mean, just nailed him to the ground. The guy was practically unconscious. And I mean, that's just the way he reacted. He was trained in martial arts and stuff like that. And he just put the guy down. And there are people, I think, that wake up that way. So if this guy was sleeping, like, with a gun in his hand, because maybe in the 1870s that wasn't unusual or something.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, today there's people walking around like that. But anyway, you know, you wake somebody up, they got a gun in the hand, they might react that way and just pull up and shoot before they even know what's happening. I'll buy that.
Well, evidently, going to sleep with a gun under your pillow was something that happened in the 1920s as well. State v. Bradley, this was a case in 1920s where a Texas man, Mr. Bradley, testified that he and his mistress were preparing for bed when he became alarmed about an enemy who had made threats against him.
It already sounds bad. It's his mistress.
Yeah, I know, right? So, but he was fearing a secret attack, so he went to bed with a pistol under his pillow.
And shot the mistress.
Later, he woke up. He heard a noise. He jumped up and fired shots. And then when he found, quote unquote, found himself and got reconciled, he lit a lamp and his girlfriend was dead at the foot of the bed. And he was convicted of murder, but the conviction was reversed on appeal because the jury had not been informed of the possibility he could have been asleep and fired the shots without volition while in a somnambulistic state.
I'm going to, my BS detector is going off on that one. When there's a mistress involved, I think something else was going on. He had to end that situation, and so he found a way to do it. He read about that 1870 case or something.
Yeah.
And so that's why he used that defense.
He was found with matches in his hand trying to set the place on fire.
Was he?
No.
Oh. Still, wouldn't surprise me.
He changed
his... Yeah, he said, oh, I just woke up. Good thing he woke me up before I burnt this place down. That's what I was dreaming about.
He was changing his name from Bradley to Terrell and moving to Massachusetts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't buy that one either. As soon as you said he was going to sleep with his mistress, that means there was still a wife involved there somewhere.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe it was just the vernacular of the time.
I don't think so. It's funny how she was his mistress when they went to bed, and after he shot her dead, it was his girlfriend.
That is true.
The way you read that, that's the way it was written.
Yeah, it's funny.
Well, she got demoted after that, huh?
Or maybe promoted?
I don't know. What's a promotion? I would think mistress. Are you promoted to girlfriend from mistress?
Posthumously?
I guess so.
Well, she was dead.
Wasn't no Purple Heart.
Another case, and this is actually a Canadian case, Regina V. Parks, and this was regarding a Canadian man, Kenneth Parks, in 1987, and he was tried for the murder of his mother-in-law, and he used the sleepwalking defense. And the testimony came out, and the evidence showed that on the night of her death, he arose from bed, drove 14 miles to the house of his in-laws, and there was testimony that he was very close with them, and strangled his father-in-law until he actually passed out, and then bludgeoned his mother-in-law with a tire iron and stabbed them both with a kitchen knife. And the mother-in-law died, and then the father-in-law barely survived. But
he was pissed.
And then so basically Parks went to the police station, and the police said he seemed very confused about what had transpired. And they noted that he appeared oblivious to the fact that he'd severed tendons in both his own hands while attacking them. And so his obliviousness to the pain, along with some other factors, which basically were the a strong history of sleep disorders, led experts to testify that he had been sleepwalking during the attack and was found not conscious, not responsible, and not guilty.
I don't buy that either.
14 miles.
Yeah, I don't buy that. How do you drive 14 miles asleep?
That's crazy.
I just don't buy it. That one, I thought it was going to be the one. Of course, this guy, I don't think he claimed to be asleep. He killed his mother-in-law with an axe in the garage. He claimed that he thought she was a raccoon. And so he grabbed an axe and started whacking at the raccoon. And after he'd hit her two or three times, he realized that it was his mother-in-law, but something just snapped, and he whacked her about 40 more times.
That's horrible.
I know, but this was his defense. I thought she was a raccoon. So is your mother-in-law wear a mask around, and she's only like 2 feet tall and furry, or what?
So there's another case. I mean, there's a lot of these cases. 1994 in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania v. Rixgers. And Michael Rixgers was convicted of murder of his wife, and he said he'd actually killed her during a sleepwalking episode. And they said that basically it was provoked by his sleep apnea. They said, the prosecutors basically said that Rixgers was upset that his wife was planning to leave him. And Rixgers basically told police that he awoke to find a gun in his hand with his wife bleeding in bed beside him. And he said that he might have dreamed about an intruder breaking in, but that really didn't help him with the jury. And he was sentenced to life in prison without parole.
Yeah, I don't believe that one either. When she's already talking about leaving him, and then she ends up dead.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't buy that either.
Another one, Arizona v. Falatar, and this is 1997. And Scott Falatar stabbed his wife 44 times with a hunting knife, and then he dragged her body into the backyard pool and kept her head underwater. And evidently a neighbor saw him doing this and called the police. And he apparently had no motive. And he essentially tried to mount this sleepwalking defense and said that he had a history of sleepwalking and had been sleep deprived and was unconscious at the time of the attack. But the problem was that he had tried to conceal some evidence, and police found the knife, the bloody clothes, the boots, the gloves, and a Tupperware container hidden in his car. And also there was testimony that between the stabbing and the drowning, the neighbor saw him motion for his dog to lie down. And they said that was a possible sign of consciousness.
A possible one?
Yeah. Hey, lay down. Fido, lay down. I'm trying to kill your mom.
But here's what, if you're going to mount that defense, why do you try to hide anything? Why hide the knife? Why hide the bloody clothes? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Those are meditated thoughts that you have.
Yeah.
You know, that's not, I wake up and say, what the hell happened here? Honey, are you all right? Get your head out of the pool and quit bleeding in the water. I just cleaned it today.
Sound like Goofy. It's your Goofy voice.
You do. Well, that's not Goofy. This is Goofy.
This is the voice you always make for Charlie. So one more case was a California v. Reitz, and Reitz had killed his lover, Eva Weinfurther.
His lover.
Well, she was married.
See, it says lover.
Yep, and they were supposed to be going on a...
mistress and lover is a dead giveaway in any court case.
They were supposed to be going on a romantic Catalina Island getaway, and they didn't make it. He smashed her head with a flower pot, leaving shards in her scalp, dislocated her arm, punctured her with a plastic fork, fractured her wrist, ribs, jaw, facial bones, skull, and left 3 gaping stab wounds in the back of her neck. And he said he had no recollection of the attack, and basically he remembered it through flashbacks that he was maybe in a scuffle with a male intruder.
I hope he went to jail for good.
So basically the evidence showed that he worked as a commercial fisherman and told police that basically the wounds on her neck were nearly identical to those a fisherman would use to kill a shark, if you had to kill a shark.
So that's what he did, is he thought he was killing a shark.
And his parents said that he'd been a sleepwalker since his childhood, but really the jury didn't buy it. They actually there was some history of violence between the two, and there was actually one incident where somebody had testified that he had broken into her apartment and told her that he would gut her like a fish.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually gut someone like a fish, not necessarily her. So
that's just ridiculous.
Now, let me ask you a question. You've heard these cases,
mm-hmm.
and you've heard how ridiculous they are.
Right.
Now, let's go back to our buddy, Brian Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
He had a history of sleep issues.
So says he.
Well, let me lay this out here. History of sleep issues. History showed that he and his wife had a very loving relationship.
That's what he said.
There was no motive whatsoever.
That's what he said.
No incidents. There was a altercation that took place immediately before they moved their camper to somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as he realized what he did, he immediately called the police and told them exactly what happened.
As you should do if you're going to use that for your defense.
And then...
And don't cover up any evidence.
He didn't cover up any evidence.
That's
good. He laid it out there.
There you go.
He never threatened to gut her like a fish.
Well, that's fine.
Now, can you juxtapose that case with these other ones I talked about?
The other ones are a big stretch. I mean, of course, a guy got away with decapitating someone and burning down their working home.
It was 1846. That was common in that day.
Yeah. But here's what I'm going to tell you is all tied in every one of those. It was a man. You don't have any of those where a woman sleepwalked and killed somebody. They're all men. Men aren't very smart. I don't know if you know that about men. Men aren't very smart. That's the best they could come up with. They just wanted to get rid of somebody, and the best they can come up with is, oh, I'll just kill them and say I was asleep. And that's what that was. I don't believe any of them. Every one of those people. Now, the only one I will go along with is you wake somebody up and you don't know them, something could happen. You're going to get punched or shot or something like that. If it's, you know, a stranger, depending on your situation and certain periods of time, you know. I mean, I imagine there could have been soldiers that sleeping in the field, and if somebody woke them up wrong, they might have turned around with their gun and shot somebody or something like that. So I don't think that's the same thing, a reactive type thing. When you beat somebody in the head and stab them 44 times and shove their head in a pool or burn down their place of employment or, you know, some of these other, the one that gutted them like a fish and all this brutality. How do you have all that brutality and beating people and stabbing people and not wake up?
Well, and that's what I'm saying. If you look at that first case, it's a little bit different than those other ones.
It's a little bit different, but it doesn't. I don't think they did a very good investigative job. I think the people in town liked him. Maybe they didn't like her. Maybe she wasn't well liked, so I think they gave him a free pass on that.
Well,
or whatever.
That book that I read, it actually went into that the the science behind it a little bit and the neurological things that happen whenever you have some sort of habit, and like, mm-hmm. it was kind of analyzing how you develop habits and things like that. And it was very interesting. It talks about the part of the brain that actually is responsible for habits, and that they've actually can scan your brain when you have certain habits going on, and they can detect which parts are activated and which parts aren't. So it was very interesting to hear that. And I imagine if you hired an expert and put on some testimony about that and really explain that to the jury, and maybe even if we had that on our podcast and explain it, you might understand it a bit more, and maybe I would understand it a bit more, and you might be a bit more swayed with the scientific data.
Oh, he could give me all the science that he wants, but I wouldn't believe it. I wouldn't. Don't confuse me with facts. My mind's made up. I think that first guy, he got a pass, just like, do you remember several years back where the guy was, as I remember, the guy was small, the woman was pretty big, and she used to abuse him mm-hmm. all the time. Used to beat on him, humiliate him in front of everybody and everything. Well, one day everybody realizes they haven't seen her in a while. And the little guy's happily going back and forth to work. So they go to the house and, oh, she's gone. Well, it ended up somebody started noticing a smell, and they went to the shed out back, and they look in there. They don't see anything, but there's a bunch of paint cans stacked in there. So they open up the paint cans and find her chopped up into bits, stuffed in paint cans.
Oh, my gosh.
And the guy had finally snapped. He'd had enough. And so he killed her and chopped her up and tried to hide her in these paint cans in the shed. Well, they took him to trial, and he admitted it and all the abuse that he had suffered and everything. And he didn't get off completely free, but they didn't charge him with murder.
Yeah.
They got him with something a lot less, like he went to jail for like 5 years or something like that.
Well, there is a defense also. It's historically called battered wife syndrome.
Right.
But, I mean, you could probably apply a battered spouse syndrome as well.
Yeah,
it goes,
I guess,
both ways. So, yeah, you can lay that out there. So, but as far as sleepwalking as a defense, it's actually been used in popular culture a couple times too.
Yeah.
Everybody remembers in the first season of Perry Mason, there was one episode titled The Case of the Sleepwalker's Niece.
I'm pretty old, but I don't remember the first season of Perry Mason. I remember Perry Mason, but I don't remember the first season.
Well, do you remember?
I had to catch it on Netflix or something.
Do you remember an episode called Dream Catchers that was in the fifth season of the TV series of Teen Wolf?
No, I never watched the series Teen Wolf. I watched Teen Wolf 1. When I saw Teen Wolf 2, that was the end of my tribulations with Teen Wolf.
Well, I never knew Teen Wolf actually had a TV series, so I was a little caught off guard by that. But according to this article I read, the fifth season of Teen Wolf has an episode called Dream Catchers, which is about sleepwalking and murder. So,
well, hey, they got that one right by me. I never saw Teen Wolf, the series.
It's probably on YouTube somewhere.
It could be.
Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show wherever we talk about different legal terms we discussed. And I usually quiz Tommy and see if he can remember some of the different legal theories.
Yes, Alex, I'll go for mens rea for 500.
Why don't you just go ahead and jump in and explain to me the two things that are required for a crime? Well, at least for a murder, at least.
Mens rea, which mm-hmm. is the mental forethought to commit the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the other? Active rea, something to that effect that says that you actually did the crime, that you actually physically committed it.
That's right. Now, can you think of, so that the we were talking about the defense that you don't have the mental capacity, so that was one of the elements. Can you think of any crime where there is a mens rea, but no actus reus?
Well, I would say that is when, like, you hire somebody to kill somebody. You didn't actually do it, but you had the thought to do it, and you got somebody else to do it for you.
Oh, you mean like a conspiracy?
Yeah.
Wrong!
Oh.
That was a little bit of a setup.
Oh.
I thought you might say that. But actually, conspiracy does have an actus reus portion of it under common law.
When you pay the guy or whatever, encourage him to do it, is that your actus?
Well, you actually have to take a step in furtherance of it under traditional common law.
A step in furtherance?
Yeah, so that would be the act.
So I fell into your trap?
You did.
Damn, I hate when I fall in a trap.
Actually, when I first asked you that question, that was actually the example I was going to use, like conspiracy, because I was like, oh, there's no act in a conspiracy. And then while you were answering it, I was like, no, wait, there is. Doesn't matter. I caught him!
Well, this was a conspiracy.
That was a conspiracy. It's more of a setup.
Yeah, you set me up. See?
And for the final legal briefs.
Ever?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
For this episode.
I thought you were walking out on me. I was going to have to go to sleep and kill you.
This is the end. What is the term that I've been referring to sleepwalking murder as, and can you pronounce it?
Homicidal somberaeus.
Somberaeus?
Homicidal somberito.
Somnambulism.
Somnambulism.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, the ambulance.
Ambulance. Anyway, that's a great term, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm going to try to work that into my daily language as my word usage thing.
I'm going through work like I'm somnambulancing.
I'm somnambulancing. That sounds like some hillbilly something they would say.
Well,
it's like the southern definition of sensuous.
What's that?
Sensuous up. Could you get me a beer?
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well then, not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I'm just a dude.
Thanks for listening.